podcast is intended for mature audiences. The views and opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not reflect in any way those of the podcast partners, sponsors, or affiliates. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and you're listening to the voice of the people. Let's get ready for Boxing Voice.
Hey, Daddy, this is Dollarbee.
BoxingVoice.com.
No matter what nobody say, man, you can't nobody fuck with me. You know, I can't be fucked with, you know.
Donald D. Beyonce Productions.
Whether you pay to see me win, or you pay to see me lose, you're gonna pay. Look, your kids still gotta eat. I don't have to watch, you know, any footage of a fight. I mean, because I'm Floyd Mayweather, everybody gotta watch me. I know eventually I'm gonna have to fight Oscar. I feel like even straight up and down, no really no special effects.
BoxingVoice.com.
I can see Canelo had the biggest deal. Your deal is for $300 million. And I made $350 million just in one fight. And you're fighting on the app.
BoxingVoice.com.
I'm a king, okay? I eat a feast. Every time I eat a feast. And when I get up from the table, I don't give a fuck who gets the leftovers. At the end of the day, it's all my green plate.
BoxingVoice.com.
Good morning, TBB. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another morning edition. It is Tuesday, and TBB has a jam-packed show. We will be discussing two-part welterweight topic. Did Bob Arum in Top Rank fail Terrence Bud Crawford? Now that every day that passes, another welterweight that was available gets signed up to fight. And we're talking about Sean Porter, who was available, and Sebastian Formella, who was available. And we really wanted that IBO WBO unification for Bud, but it looks like they're listening, and Al particularly loves this show, or at least the ideas that manifest on this show. I mean, I gotta say the same for Oscar. As the rumor has it, he's in negotiations with Bob Arum in Top Rank to see if Bud does what Nestor Gibbs says and goes to 154 pounds and fights Patrick Teixeira. You know, earlier in the year, he felt like, no, why would I go to 154? I guess after a few conversations with he and his buddies and probably our show, he realized you're creating pound-for-pound legacy by going up and getting another divisional title. But Sean Porter, blessed be with Al Haymon and Fox. I know that the news came down that he lost his job as a commentator, and we assumed that there was a possibility because of the pandemic that he would have lost his four-fight PBC on Fox deal, and that is not the case, as Michael Coppinger of The Athletic is reporting that Sean Porter versus Sebastian Formella will happen on August 22nd, which is the same day as Alexander Povetkin, but hey, that's in a whole other country at a whole other time zone, so we should be able to watch both. But on August 22nd on Fox, on PBC. So for Sean Porter, this is everything that he needs. But we'll dive into that in a minute. Let me go on out to Corpus Christi's own tornado hurricane survivor. The one, the only, Money May Munguia.
It's me, Mario.
Call me Money May, call Sean August Money, because he coming back August 22nd. That's the rumor, at least. I don't think anything's official yet, but Mike is obviously a reliable source. And we could take this, with not much of a grain of salt.
I hate to rock over your intro, champ, but I spoke to Formella. It's absolutely true. We might even...
No, I'm not saying it's not true. It's just not finalized. There's no press release. I don't know if they've signed contracts yet. That's all I mean is that
even if you go to Formella's Instagram, he's announcing it. He's like,
I agree that they've agreed in principle. I'm just saying, like, there's been no press release from Fox about a card.
According to Dan Rayfield, the announcement from Fox for all August and the end of the fall show should be coming this week.
So, yeah, that well, you know, and here's the thing about that too.
Dan Rayfield,
you know, they said they were
going to
come on Friday. Yes, of course. They said it was going to come last Friday. I had heard it wasn't, and it didn't. And now it's supposed to come this week. It has to with everything that's happened. You know, it doesn't make sense from last week with Showtime. You know, the buzz they got. It does make sense for it to come this week. So I expect it to be announced, you know, and like I said, I don't think that we need a grain of salt with this, whether it's finalized or not. You know, Mike's a reliable source, and obviously Formella's going saying it's happening. So, yeah, man, I think, listen, we'll chop it up. But for me, I think that we've been conditioned in this time that we're at to see fights a little differently. And I see this much different than I probably would have pre-pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, yeah, we use the term this is a pandemic fight or it's pandemic season. And I understand what that means. And for those, you know, that just start following the program, obviously that means that the level or the quality of opposition versus the A side doesn't match. And we understand that because we're in a pandemic, the promoters can't normally find the opposition because of COVID testing and positive results and finances, no crowds, et cetera. But this is beyond a pandemic fight in the sense that this is exactly what the doctor ordered for Sean Porter, a tough-nosed veteran who, you know, goes in there time after time, regardless of who he's facing, and gives you the best performance that he can. It's funny because 3 years ago, maybe he wasn't as admired as he is now. Back then, it was considered an ugly fight, not just a tough fight. Now it's more like Sean Porter is that test, and we do want to see you face him to see, can you beat him? Because if not, then you're not the goods. But we got TJ that says, Showtime Sean Porter, soon, 3-time world champion. And I'm with you. Look, I see people saying, oh, there's no respect for the IBO. And look, that is a topic of opinion. The truth is, if you get a recognized champ to start to treat that title as any of the others, he will garner that attention and respect. I mean, when you think of like Sebastian Formella's post, let me see if I can pull it up so I don't have to paraphrase the entire thing. But, you know, he's basically saying like, look, the news was leaked. And since it is, yes, it's true. I'm facing Sean. You know, I'm super excited. You know, this guy is, let me see what he got here. Where we got Sebastian? What up, Sebash? Yo, it was funny. Yo, he hit me back, man. He talks in English. I was happy to hear that. And he's excited, bro. I don't know if he could do Skype, so that's what we're really waiting on. Maybe we could slot him in a day. We do got Barry Hunt in about 18 minutes. For those that don't know, Barry Hunter, the trainer of Franchon Cruz and, you know, Isaac Dogbay, amongst others like, you know, Rashid Warren and Patrick Harris Jr., and even played chief second for Sean Porter on many occasions. So this is the post. I'm screen sharing it now. Let me just make sure it's lining up nice, which is not. Let me adjust. Boop. There you go. Slight adjustment, and we're good. Then we got to change this from Germany. From Germany.
Yo, real quick, while you're doing that, just to give everybody, you know, the full scope of everything, they are saying it's going to be August 22nd on PBC on Fox, main event, and it's supposed to be at the – supposedly at the Microsoft Theater in downtown L.A., That's where it is being rumored to be. But like we said earlier, there has been no official announcement through Fox or PBC. And as Sebastian put it, I guess it's been leaked. I don't even know if it was supposed to be, you know, leaked or not. I don't know if, you know, cop just got the scoop and ran with it, or if maybe they used it as an opportunity to kind of to gauge the waters and see what people think. But, you know, PBC does return to Fox on August 8th with Thomas DeLorme and Jamal James. So this would be roughly 2 weeks, right? Yeah, about 2 weeks from the day that they come back. So I don't know if there's maybe a card mixed in there, but if not, you know, 2 weeks later is not that big a deal. But, yeah, go ahead, Ness.
Yeah,
I don't know if you had translated it or not.
The thing is, whatever, desktop is not nothing like the app. It doesn't translate on desktop, so I got to pull it up on my phone. So whack.
Got you.
Unless it's...
Well,
no, it's not.
I'll give you some right. background real quick.
I got it.
Go ahead.
Because like I said, I had to put it up on my phone. So he says,
no,
attention, news. After last night's first information leak through the net, yes, I will be boxing Sean Porter in the USA on August 22nd. I know I go into this fight for many as an outsider, but I have become a professional boxer to compete with the best in the world, and I will throw everything I can into this ring. When my promoter, Earl Silen, called me, I immediately said yes, without knowing the details. Porter is one of the absolute top of the world, and I have great respect for him, but I am not flying to the USA to lose. I am really in the mood for this fight. I would like to thank my promoter for the opportunity, my team for the great support in these difficult times, including through the corona, and all of you for the support in these years, especially now before the biggest fight of my career. More info coming soon.
Okay. Well, just
so
a little background.
So that sounds official to me.
I mean, listen, official and sounding official are two different things.
Nah, you're right.
And we
Maurice
know that
Lee,
very well, you know.
Maurice Lee made us believe that, you know, he was official. But like you said, background,
yeah.
he's simultaneously number 9 in the IBF, but he's also the IBO champion. I did contact the IBO, and this is what I was told. Let me pull that up. Because I asked Sebastian in this comment section. I should have just hit him up since we had started chatting. But whatever. I went straight to the IBO, and this is what they have for me for now. I said, is Porter Sebastian Formella for the IBO? He said, trying to find out on that. Just taking an early guess, though. Sebastian defends his title, but Porter doesn't pay the fees. Or Heyman all of a sudden starts to use the IBO more and more.
Then it's turned into the PBC belt.
Or Sebastian simply relinquishes it for the best day of his life and gets mauled.
No, he did not say that.
Nah. But he did say relinquish it. He did say relinquish
that's
it.
A-
But we all know he's going to get mauled. Like, come on, listen. You know, I'm going to start giving these people shots out. I don't have any affiliation with them. And I used to, for a long time, only give negative publicity. But, you know, there was rumors that, like, it was the same guy writing all the articles under different handles. I really don't care. I'm starting to enjoy the way the Boxing News 24 writes. They're very aggressive and straightforward. And they do a very detailed job of connecting all the dots, sourcing information, not telling you where the source is coming from or where they got their quotes from, and instead, you know, sharing the love with whoever they use those quotes and putting together story very well. So when discussing, you know, Sean Porter and Sebastian Formella, I think they did a fantastic job. Discussing who Formella's, you know, top opponents were, you know, being really honest about him never being on this level. And obviously that's all things that we knew, but look, everyone has to, it's everyone's first time, if that makes any sense, you know what I mean? So at some point you will be tested and you either fail or pass and you know, unfortunate for Sebastian. This is a tough mountain to climb. You know, in Sean Porter, who was a two-divisional welterweight champ, not just two-division, like, oh, I was a champ in the lower division. No, two times he's been able to become a welterweight during this generation, during, you know, the times when Kell Brook and Floyd and Thurman were welterweights. And now, again, he became a champion when, you know, guys like Crawford and Earl and others were champions. So, you know, Porter's definitely been fighting consistently on a highest level. So it is Mount Everest for Formella. But thankfully to this article, I mean, we kind of seen it in the Thulani men's fight, but they make it clear that Formella's a mover, and that Porter cannot come into this fight thinking it's a tune-up, because Formella actually has decent wheels, and Porter will need to cut that distance and obviously slow Formella down. Now, they're in no shape or fashion are they picking Formella, just giving you his, you know, I guess, strengths and weaknesses. But have you, because you weren't on the show, so you probably didn't follow the Thulani Minj hype and actually watch him versus Formella. Did you?
Yeah, I actually did, because I remember when we first started talking about Thulani Minj, and it was almost like a joke. You kind of had talked about it, and it would be like this punchline. And then more and more, you know, we started kind of rooting for him, and he kind of became like the TBV mascot a little bit, maybe, you know, a little bit. And so, yeah, I was actually very, very interested to see him fight. And I was also interested to, you know, see what happens with the belt, because we had talked about that and, you know, all that. But here's the thing. I feel strongly in saying that in this era, the belt doesn't necessarily make the man. The man can make the belt. And what I mean by that is that you can look at the IBO and say whatever you want about it, and you probably be correct in saying it. But Sean Porter, to win that title, whether he pays the sanction fees or not, but if he were to win that title and take it, he automatically adds more title in everybody's mind as a whole than it has gotten in, I mean, probably generations, or maybe not that one, but it's been a while, you know, specifically for the welterweight belt. And so that's where I'm at with this, is like, you know, it could be for the title. I would be cool with it. I think that it's a good fight right now. It definitely is. It's somebody who, you know, because Porter deserves this. Like, you go and look at his resume right now, and, you know, he's fought in a row Broner, Thurman, Berto, Granados, Garcia, Ugas. Like, bro, give the man some time to breathe. You know, Earl Spence, which was his last fight in September the 28th, 2 days before my birthday. And, you know, so here he comes. It's almost a year removed, about 11 months. But Sebastian fought in 2020, so he has fought this year. So, you know, I don't know what that's really going to do. Usually I would probably say something, but I don't think that's that big a deal, right? With a guy like Porter, who's always going to be in shape, who's always going to come ready, who's always going to have his game plan, that it's going to make it a rough night for someone else. You know, I don't care when this kid fought. You know, he is in a fight of his life. And so this is a type of fight that he deserves, you know. But ultimately, the question goes back to, you know, was the ball dropped in not getting Sebastian Formella for you know, one of the other welterweights, specifically Terrence Crawford?
I mean, I think that the only answer for that can come when we find out if the rumors are true. And I say rumors, but Michael Coppinger is reporting it. So shout out to Stonebone. Truly, you know, showing that he's connected when it comes to that camp, because, you know, Coppinger and them are reporting it this morning, I think, or late last night. And, you know, he told us that yesterday sometime or whatever. But the point is that if they don't get that secured, yeah, I mean, you got to look at it as a dropping of the ball. I mean, think about it. Every single welterweight is fighting. And I'm not talking just top names. I'm talking C and Bs too. Actually, Josecito is still out there, and that's a great fight still because of what Josecito did in the seventh round with Thurman. So I would accept that, you know. And Castillo Clayton is still out there, but obviously Castillo Clayton, we haven't seen him debut with a U.S. fighter yet. But, like, yo, you got to think about it. Abel Ramos is fighting. Ugas is fighting him. Jamal James is fighting Delorme. You know, now Porter's fighting Sebastian. Earl and Garcia is going to be on pay-per-view. I sent you the Mauricio Suleiman clip yesterday. It's just we'd be dropping the ball. But, like, that's going to be on pay-per-view. That's getting announced. It's just so many, like, every welterweight has a fight. Thurman, you know, leave it to intrigue. Thurman believes this just is the writing on the wall, which leads to Thurman rematching Pacquiao. Because if you're Pacquiao, who do you fight? But I think, you know, if you're Mario, you're thinking, well, it could be Thurman, and that makes a lot of logical sense, but you still have that ace in the hole of Amir Khan, right? He's still out there for Pacquiao. And so is Mikey, for that matter. So it's not a shoe-in for Thurman, but, you know, essentially all the available names are scraped up. Now you got to pay big money to make Mikey convince himself to not wait for Pacquiao, or Thurman to not wait for Pacquiao. Like, those are expensive names during this time that I just find a little bit difficult to make. But again, it's more about Porter. And like you said, this is okay because it's Porter. It's because he's coming off a loss, because it's a year almost that he's been out of the ring. Everything about Formella makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. The fact that it's also an offensive, defensive move on a chessboard, and they're snatching the belt up. They're taking that undefeated opponent away. That just is like the cherry on top. You know what I mean? Chess, yeah. Not checkers.
No, listen, and here's the other part about it. You know, I wouldn't automatically go to, oh, they dropped the ball with the Sean Porter fight. You know what I mean? Like, because here's the thing. Like, there was no inclination that Crawford was going to get anybody real like that. You know, there was no inclination he was going to get a Porter. We had Ugas on, even when they were talking about the potential of a Ugas fight and those rumors were circulating. He came on and shut him down completely. He said, I've never been offered that fight. He said that nobody's ever contacted me about that fight. You know, so it was somebody throwing, you know, ish at the wall and seeing if it sticks. And it didn't stick for very long. You know, the narrative has been Bud coming out and saying, I don't want to fight in a pandemic. I don't want to take small
knock,
money.
Though?
And so it's – go ahead.
Isn't that the knock, though, on Arum? And you know, obviously Team Crawford gets it because that, like, you know, there are – like, that's the guy people want to see fight. But, like, that's the knock. That Arum says, oh, Ugas is a good fight. Oh, Porter, I guess he's a good fight now that he had that good fight with Earl. And yeah, Thurman, we could make him an offer. Yeah, I love the Jermell talk, but no offers go out. Like, I posted on our Instagram a tweet that Crawford said in April telling Thurman to shut up, because I bet I'm paraphrasing, but it's on our Instagram at The Boxing Voice, and it says something like, let me screen share, but he says something like, oh, shut up. You know, I bet you if we sent you a contract, you would disappear or something like that, he says. Let me pull it up. Pulling it up. 3-2 here.
Pulled up.
And so as you can see, Terrence tells Keith, shut your ass up. You don't know what you want to do, because I bet you if contract be sent, your ass will find a way out. So stop playing with my name. But again, never a contract sent, never a bluff called. You know what I mean? Instead, Thurman is the one to have the last word and say, send the contract, not only to Bob, but to Crawford as well. And it's just a little strange, you know, because those are decent fights. Like, at least they can say the same thing they said to us about Danny a bunch of years ago. Did we accept it? No. And I'm not lying to my audience trying to say that we would accept it this time, but at least there was an excuse. Like, look, we sent him $3 million. He didn't want it. Like, what's up with Thurman, though? Like, you know, that's a good fight. No offer sent. It's just strange. Rashidi Ellis is now fighting. Boots is fighting. Virgil just fought. Like I said, Ugas is fighting. Jamal is fighting. Delorme is fighting. Every single welterweight is fighting. So,
and I think that – go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to end it really in saying that, you know, we have to stop saying that this is Bud hate and more like, yeah, well, damn, is Bob really, you know, like failing Crawford? Like,
does he have a plan actually? Does he actually have a plan?
Bro, he didn't send Charlo an offer. Charlo just announced the unification. Obviously, I am being honest here. It is without a doubt a possibility that offers would have went out and Al would have said no, because all these plans that were just unveiled in the last week could have been there. And, you know, he just had his own plans. But at
least – could have been there pre-pandemic. Yeah.
But at least Crawford and his team could have – well, look, we are trying. We are trying. But that's not the case, you know. They're leaving Bud out in the cold, man. It's
because at
crazy.
Least you could have the narrative that, look, you know, nobody's fighting me. You know,
yeah.
I'm continuing to be ducked. But that's just not the case at this point, because like you said, and here's the thing I think that might bother. I know it bothers me. It might bother others, and it might be what's bothering you. When you think about Bob Arum and you think about Top Rank, everybody talks about how like he's this masterful promoter, and he is. So you always assume that he's got this trick up his sleeve. You always assume that he's got this ace in the hole. But with Bud, it just doesn't seem to be there. Whatever this master plan is to seduce a Pacquiao into a fight, or to get the Errol Spence buildup, or to fight an Ugas, or to fight a Thurman, or to fight anybody really, it's just not there. Somebody is dropping the ball. And listen, again, we can't get out of pocket here, because we all knew that he wasn't going to fight. I mean, listen, the reports last I heard from his own mouth is he likely wasn't going to fight this year. So we can't hold his feet to the water and say, you know, completely, oh, well, this is, you know, a surprise or a shock. But it's just odd to continuously come back to be coming back from the pandemic and to continuously hear welterweight after welterweight after welterweight, and also 154 pounders get their fight signed, who was not, maybe not in contention, but at least their names were buzzing around Crawford's. So for this to just add to the list, it just feels like repetitive. It feels like another one again, him too. Like, let Pacquiao announce this week and it's all over now. Like, it's like, what? Like, what is going on here? What is the plan? Like, something's got to give. And for there to be no inclination of that, like if they were to come out and at least say like, oh, Bud's not fighting for the year. But I don't think that Bob is sold on that. And I don't think that he wants that to be the case. And I don't know, you know, if somebody's trying to call the others bluff or what's going on here. But the situation is straight. And what's going on is it seems like welterweights are getting exactly what they need at this point, specifically talking about Porter. He is getting the fight he deserves. Somebody is looking out for him. Somebody
Absolutely.
Has a plan, and somebody is navigating his career very specific.
Taking
and very
care of him.
Correctly.
This
exactly.
This is a check during the pandemic. This is a stay busy, comeback fight during the pandemic. This is a promoter to a fighter, handler to a fighter. Get your confidence back. It's all right. You did great. Go in there and knock this guy out. Let's get you back in the saddle. And, you know, I just like to see people getting taken care of. You know, we've been watching Sean his entire career, like Crawford, like any fighter. And you don't want to see them get jerked on this level and just be a piece of meat, so to speak. So real quick update. Barry is saying we're good to go. I'm hoping he did, you know, Skype. If not, we're going to have to rock out, you know, older gen is the older gen. We might have to rock out with telephone. Hopefully he's got a son or daughter, wife that could hook him up and just create those Skype accounts for us. Nice and easy, rapidito. Because it would be interesting to talk to Barry. You know, Barry once told me in Florida a story that I'm going to see if he can repeat and see if all those years ago I connected those dots wrong. But I feel like many, many moons ago in Florida, he was talking about Terrence Crawford. We'll find out. We'll find out. I'll bring it up specifically and see if he remembers. And then if not, fish a little bit more. But still.
We got the man.
Oh, Barry. Yes.
What's up,
in
brother?
The house.
Barry, how are you? I'm over here telling the audience. I'm like, I'm not sure if he's got the Skype, so we're seeing if someone's going to hook it up for him. How are you, man? You're looking great. You look
Thanks,
great,
man.
I'm
hanging in there, man, during this crazy times, right?
Yes.
It's a beautiful day outside, man.
Oh, man. Listen, so definitely very, very excited to have you on. As we've seen your last performance, obviously with Isaac Dogbay, just blown away. I mean, from the beginning, I thought, wow, his shoulders are a little big. He's a little muscular. Is he going to gas out? But it was like, you guys, I don't know what he did, what you did, what changes were made, but he was just like a little machine. Defense was so much better. Can you just, I don't know, walk us through the beginning when he came to you and how long it's been to get him here, and are you satisfied with this performance?
Well, that last question, yes, I'm definitely satisfied with what I saw from Isaac. It was funny how this thing worked out. You know, I like to say it was divine intervention. We watched this fight, the first time I ever saw him fight. And when he won the title, as a matter of fact. And that Monday, we were back in the gym, and I had said to Boogie, you know, Patrice Harris. And I said to him, I said, man, yo, I saw this kid fight this weekend from Ghana. And I said, man, I was really impressed with him, man. I said, I would love to work with that guy. You know what I mean? And so that was just a conversation we had, you know, gym talk. And a little time later, I know he had lost to Navarrete. I didn't see the second fight, but I saw the first. And it wasn't the same kid that I had saw the first time out. And so his dad actually got in contact with Boogie via Instagram and, you know, wanted Boogie to work the pass for Isaac. So Boogie asked me about it. I said, cool, bring him on down. And he was only supposed to stay down 2 weeks. But he fell in love with us, and he ended up staying down, called his father and said, yo, man, this is where I want to be, this is where I want to stay. And so we started to work with him, and, you know, first and foremost, he's just a good soul. You know what I mean? Anybody would love to work with this guy. Mm-hmm. And he had a confidence problem when he first came, put him in with some guys, and, you know, I could tell that, you know, he wasn't 100% confident in what he was doing. And so I told Boogie, look, we're going to step back a little bit. And we're going to go ahead and build that confidence up, man, and see what he can do from there. And so I put him in there with guys that I knew he could handle. And after that, man, he just shot, his confidence just shot through the ceiling. You know, he became one of the boys. And I was really, really elated with what I saw from him last Tuesday. He exceeded my expectations for sure.
Definitely. He was so much fun to watch, and he was definitely one of the bright spots of the card. But let me ask you, how good can he be, do you think?
I think as long as, you know, because my whole thing was to not put him in a third war after the two beatings that he had taken. And so, you know, I didn't want a fight that would guarantee him a win, but a fight that would make him think, a fight that would make him depend on, you know, his skill set for sure. I think the sky's the limit for Isaac, to be honest with you. The foundation was there. He said on the telecast that when we got him, he was a broken man. I don't think so. I think he was fractured. I think that he was wounded on the battlefield, but I definitely think he has the foundation to recapture that title again, for sure.
That's what's up. Yeah, I got a lot of hope for him. I can't wait to see him again. But just catch us up with you for a second. What's been going on? And you know, how's the gym shaping out? How's everybody's work getting in during this time? You know, just talk us through the difficulties and the successes during this, you know, pandemic.
Well, of course, you know, just like everybody else, man, we had to find ways to survive time, man. You know, you got the pandemic going on, then you have, you know, people fighting not to wear masks. You have the Black Lives Matter movement going on. You know, the city was in this turmoil, you know, and along with, you know, inner city violence. So, you know, we, you know, got together one day and we said, okay, well, look, let's do something. We can't go inside the gym. What can we train at? And so we did. One of the guys that we trained, his dad runs a school, and he loaned us the football field. And so we had camp for Isaac all except for one day on a football field at Anacostia High School. So we stayed down there for about 6 to 7 weeks. I believe 3 months. Took guys getting used to the weather, because, of course, you're talking 90-plus days out there. And 4 days of spawn, I mean, 4 rounds or 2 rounds of spawn out there is like you spawn 8 to 10 rounds. And so we made it through. Everybody came through, you know, all right. And thus far, so good. We actually are going down there within the next hour, meet him down on the field today.
Oh, yeah. So
he was back in the gym. You know, when we got back that Wednesday, Friday, he was back in the gym.
Wow. Okay. And so is there any – wait, oh, man. There's somebody – you have a fighter whose fight's coming up. I just put that note up. Oh, man, who was it? Don't you have somebody – who do you have scheduled coming up next?
Sean Porter. supposed to go with Sean. I believe it's towards the end of August or early September.
Yeah, Sean's gonna actually, that's what we were talking about. He's fighting Sebastian, the IBO champion.
Right. So we're gonna get ready, lock and load, and go with Sean. But then you have, of course, Patrick Harris. You have Kobe Breedy, Keyshawn Williams, and I was supposed to have gone with Eric Walker, but it's a short notice fight. So I'm gonna.
He needs you. See what you could do, man. That dude is tough. He's with Joel Diaz. He's an Olympian. He's on a fast track. Eric gonna need you.
Yeah, that's for sure. What I'm gonna do for him, I'm gonna write a plan up for him, and hopefully they can follow it. But you know me, Nesta. I don't like last minute fights, man. You know, if I'm going out on that battlefield, I'm going to win. And 2 weeks to me, this is not enough time to get that job done.
Nah, for sure.
And you know, I would love to have had him for, you know, 6 to 8, but it's such a short notice, and we got so many other things on the plate. I would do him a real injustice just showing up. So the best thing I could do for him is, you know, put together a plan of action of what I think is the best way to attack this man, and/or not attack him, and go from there.
Without giving too much away, I mean, is the plan to exploit – because here's the thing. Like, he's obviously a talented amateur with a lot of experience, but he's only got 5 fights in the professionals. You know what I mean? We've seen with the Lomachenko what could happen to a decorated amateur who actually had pro fights because he fought in the World Series, and then come across a guy with veteran moves. You know what I'm saying? So without giving too much away, would that be kind of the route you'd want to go and exploit the little fights he has at the pros, plus the fact that he hasn't really gone very long and deep?
Well, he has a great trainer, Joel Diaz, you know.
Yeah.
A good man, and but you know me, I don't think no man is invincible. And I see 1,000 ways that you can attack this man. But to me, he's young, he has that amateur background. I think he had 200 or 300 amateur fights or something like that.
Something like that.
So you know, he's a professional amateur pro so far. And there are things that you can do. There are, you know, I watched this videotape from Friday to last night was the last video that I watched. So there are certain ways that he can be attacked, pay dividends, but for the most part, 2 weeks is just not enough time for me in my book.
I feel you.
So I heard you say something about Porter. Did you ask him if he's working with Porter for this one?
Yes, he said yes.
Oh,
they're getting
ready
to get over there.
How long did you guys know it was going to be Formella? Because we've been knowing Formella for a minute here. We actually were pulling for Thulani Minj when Formella, you know, challenged him for the IBO title when Thulani from South Africa didn't get the win. That was the guy that I thought was going to be somebody with his height and length in that welterweight division. Have you watched Formella?
Yeah, Kenny sent me just sent me the box rec to him because the opponents kept changing and the dates kept changing. So we were at a point where we didn't know, you know, when the fight was going to happen, who it was going to be, what time should I come out, should I come out at all. And so I just got his box rec the other day. Now, I kind of glanced at it, but I'm going to get a little bit deeper into it. Sean is just one of those fighters that is very, very difficult to prepare for. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get. He can box you. He can bang with you. You know, he can get rough with you. I mean, in my whole career, he's one of the most difficult fighters that I have ever seen anyone have to prepare for, to be honest.
Wow. So we were saying, you know, to our audience how this was, you know, Al or whoever Sean's handlers are taking care of him. You know, he's had a very grueling schedule ever since Adrian Broner. It's been, you know, name after name. And he's been out of the ring for about a year. So this is kind of the right fight for him to get back into things. Do you look at it that way?
I don't, because this conversation we had yesterday, and in fact, I had this conversation with Isaac. Anybody that stepped in that ring, and you guys seen it time and time again, you know, on paper, you know, you got one guy that's supposed to win, the other guy's supposed to get blown out. But when the fight starts, you know, normally, prime example, Isaac, you know, against Navarrete. You know, I mean, who knew this guy? You know, and not only did he show up, he showed out when he got there. So everybody's a threat. I really don't look at it that way. Anybody that come in that ring, I look at it as a threat and a potential person to take away that title from you. You know what I mean? So, like you said, Sean fought all kinds of names, even going back to the amateurs. When you look at his amateur resume and who he fought in the amateurs, at 165, and not only did he fight him, I mean, he beat him. You know, Daniel Jacobs, before Boo Boo, there was so many on that resume that this man fought, and he would always find a way to dig it out to come through. No, I don't really look at it like that. You know, I just look at it just another guy in our way, man, getting back to where Sean needed to be in that title. Actually, I thought that, and I would have loved them run him and Earl back, right back.
Mm. Yeah, I know
that's
what he wanted.
Yeah, that's
wanted.
A tough one for sure.
Real
quick, before we move on to that, let me ask you your opinions. We're talking about we asked the IBO or Nested really specifically, you know, whether the belt was going to be on the line. You know, with Porter, and basically they said they weren't sure if he was going to pay the sanctioning fees or not. They weren't sure what was going to go that route. You know, I'm not counting any of his pockets, and I'm not asking you to, you know, say anything that you don't want to say, but what do you think? You think that the IBO belt deserves a little more love, or you think guys should try to fight for that belt? I mean, I think it's still another title, you know, but ultimately, obviously, it's another, you know, person to pay, but what do you think?
I think that the IBO, just like any other title, or, you know, it's just like the guys that's fighting for the NABO or NABF.
Yep.
It's just a step back to get back to that WBA, WBC, IBF title.
Well said.
So you don't think that Sean should, if he wins and when he wins, kind of grab it and – I don't know, raise it above his head, embrace it as if he won it. Is that something?
No.
I definitely think, you know, not to, you know, throw no shade or stone on that title. Yes, it's something to be proud of because, you know, when you think about Planet Earth and how many fighters are actually in the business, you know, it's the odds against you winning any type of title, you know what I mean? And so definitely I think he should hoist that title up, and I think he should be proud of it.
For sure. Barry, man, a bunch of years ago, I don't know who was fighting. I'm sure you had Anthony and Lamont, but it was in Florida, I think, that we had bumped into. Oh, you froze. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. We had bumped into each other at a fight. that you were doing for your guys in Florida. I believe it was both Anthony Peterson and Lamont Peterson. I mean, I seen everybody was there. Do you remember that one time in Florida? I think you guys all had on like white track suits.
I remember that. We were talking about PVC and about the other from not wanting to, you know, pay the fighters that type of money. I remember that.
Yo, Dan, that's official. You got perfect memory. So I was telling my audience that I wasn't sure if in that conversation. All right. So I'll say it's something you had said, like, I heard, son, you had told me something like, yeah, I heard that someone isn't happy on that side of the street. So I don't want to insinuate, but it felt like you was talking about Bud back then. Do you was it Bud? And do you feel like he's not happy with how he's being handled?
Oh, no, it wasn't Bud that I was specifically speaking about. It was just people in general. You know, as far as the fight's concerned, you know and I know that and how long fighters have been getting purses that, you know, just didn't match their performance. And, you know, any given Sunday, you go up there and you start boxing, man, you know and I know that you may not leave. And so these guys are, you know, putting their neck on line and getting, you know.
We might need you to, like, stand in one place, Barry.
How could anybody be upset or mad at, you know, person in box as opposed to, you know, getting paid this little bit of money for putting their neck on the line? That's all I was saying. I thought it was time. You look at the NFL, you look at the NBA, you look at Major League Hockey, baseball. You know, all these guys get salaries, you know, to the point where they can retire maybe after one or two seasons, some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Boston,
yep.
You know, they struggling just to get money to pay their insurance.
Mm.
So,
definitely.
You think about it.
We were talking about Bob Arum kind of failing Bud in the eyes of our eyes. You know, we feel like every single welterweight just announced a fight. Like everyone that I know, Boots Ennis, Virgil just fought. Rashidi Ellis is even fighting. Brad Solomon is back. Yordani Ulgas, Abel Ramos, now Sean Porter and Sebastian Formella. Danny and Earl is going to get announced.
Jamal James.
And all the while, you know, all these opponents were potential Bud opponents. Before the pandemic, Porter was saying he would be interested. Ken was saying, well, Bob has my number. Call me. Never happened. Thurman expressed interest. Sent a contract. Never happened. Jermell Charlo said he would fight him. Bob came on our show. I love that fight. That's better than any fight. Never sent them an offer. And it just looks like, you know, Bud can't get that fight.
Man, look. The way I feel, it's simple with me. I don't believe in 4 and 5 different belts at the same sanctioning body. I think it ought to be one massive belt. And all the governing bodies kind of combined, which is in my dream world, combine their titles together and let everybody fight for that one title, and then you'll truly see who is the best person on the planet. That's not going to happen. You know what I mean? So some kind of way, hopefully everybody find a middle ground so people like Bud and some of these other fighters, you know, that don't have a lot of competition can get what they're looking for. You know, I think those, all of those names you just named, just imagine seeing all those guys go up against one another, eliminating each other, and the last two fight for that covenant crown.
Mm.
That'd be outstanding.
That would be awesome.
That would. It's just, you know, we would need those 4 to 5 sanctioning bodies to kind of get together and split their fees and make one belt, you know, maybe put the IBF off to the right the way they have Ali's face or something like that. But, again, staying on.
Wait, real quick, what was that last era that you thought that that happened?
Wow. I mean, but see, I'm going back.
Oh, I don't mind.
Back to you're going back to Jack Johnson and, you know, when he did his thing, James Corbett, you know, days like that where, you know, the best fought the best. I mean, you can even come up a little bit and go back to Ray Robinson days or Ray Leonard days. You know, Ray fought Duran. He fought Hagler. He fought Hearns, Benitez. These were great. These were just legendary fights, man. And they didn't wait till one was old. They fought each other, you know, at the peak of their
career. Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? And when you go back to them days, when you see people like that group we just spoke about, and you see like Aaron Pryor, Alexis Arguello, and man, these are legendary fights, man. So legendary. We still talking about them fights to this day.
I just saw the legendary nights last night for that fight.
Man, I'm telling you, man. So me personally, like you said, Lester, I'd like to see, you know, all those governing bodies kind of come together and create that one huge title and let everybody from around the world fight. That's us. That's people in the UK. I mean, just everywhere. And had the last two stand fight for that championship.
I agree. Listen, Barry, you being in that DMV area, man, I know that you're familiar with Gary Russell, not only from the amateurs, but from the pros, right?
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you know, obviously, you know, you might not be hip to social media, but my man has been breaking the internet in the last 48 hours. He recently said that, I believe in the Olympic Trials or Olympic Training Center, he broke Terrence Crawford's jaw, sent him to the hospital. And he says, look, I want to move up to 47. I could fight those guys at 47. I'll fight, you know, Terrence Crawford. I wanted to fight Mikey. He didn't want to fight me. I wanted to fight Leo, Abner. I mean, he's called out Tank, Devin Haney. He wanted to fight Farmer before Farmer lost the belt to Joseph Diaz. How serious do you think Gary is? Like, should us as boxing fans really be, like, can he really move from 126 to 140 for Devin Haney? From 126 to 147 for Terrence Crawford? From 126 to 135 for Gervonta Davis? Like, or is he just selling us dreams here? Like, you know him better than us.
He always, that's a very talented young man. Always have been, ever since he was a little boy. In fact, when I first saw him, he was about—he could have had to be about 5 years old or something, throwing punches in the ring then. Apparently, he sees something in these guys that he think he can exploit and come away with a victory. So, he's his own man. More power to you. If they give him that shot that he's looking for, you believe in it, go get it.
And you believe he can do it, though? Like, that's the question. Can he do it, being a smaller guy for so long? Like, he's been at 126 for so many years.
I'm not one to tell a person what they can and can't do. Apparently, him and his squad is that. They must see something that they believe in. And if you believe strongly in it, I mean, go for it. I mean, he already did, you know, to solidify his position in boxing. But apparently, he can do it. Just go for it.
And specifically Haney, you think a Haney is green enough that Russell could take advantage of? Or is that still a very difficult fight just because Haney's a natural 135-pounder?
Be honest with you. And I've known Devin since he was a little boy. We used to go out to Vegas and train his dad years ago. But I have never seen Devin fight. I saw a clip or two, especially when he came here to D.C. and fight in the, what's that, MGM, I believe it is. Came past the gym, they trained one day, and they went and did their thing. But I've never seen him fight.
All right, we got a few questions from the people, and then we will get you out of here. David Maldonado says, who wins in a fantasy fight at 147 between Miguel Cotto and Felix Trinidad, and why? I think Tito.
Miguel Cotto.
Miguel Cotto.
Wow. Wow.
I think Miguel Cotto. I think Tito, I used to like him also. He fought Maurice Blanca here when we first ever really saw him. I think that Cotto was a better all-around fighter. skill-wise. He can box you. He can bang with you. And his ring IQ was just off the charts. So, yeah, I go with Cotto.
Sway in Brooklyn says, thanks for coming on the show. Can you rank these four middleweights, Canelo, Triple G, Charlo, Andre?
Andre Ward?
Nah. Andrade.
Oh, Demetrius Andrade. Wow. Definitely, I will put Alvarez number one.
Mm-hmm. Rightfully so.
And we had, let's see, we had Demetrius and we had Charlo. And who else was that?
Triple G, Charlo, and Andrade.
Everybody else number two.
Okay.
Mm.
James Valdez in San Antonio says, in watching your last fight with Dogbe, I noticed that it was only an eight-round fight. Can you share with us the reason the camp made the decision to only do an eight-rounder, and will his next fight be 8 or 10-rounder based on what you saw from him in his last fight? I felt he could have stopped his opponent if he had stepped on the gas in the last round.
No, I think you're 100% right. I think we actually should have stopped him a couple of rounds earlier, but he was in cruise mode. And, you know, when I gave him that sign and told him to go ahead on, I believe the term I used was to either turn it up, close the show, was one of them, or spend it off. That's what I told him. And he went on ahead and did his job. We didn't have – if it was up to us, we would have fought 10 rounds. But I guess it was because of this whole – the way this whole bubble thing is working, the COVID and how many fights they had on the card, as how we only ended up going 8 rounds. But I definitely wanted to go 10 as a minimum.
All right, we have Big Nick in the UK says, thanks for coming on the show, champ. When you work with a fighter, are camps for working on your weaknesses, or are they just for working on strengths and weaknesses of your next opponent? As there seems to be an increasing number of fighters who say they don't watch fight tape on their next opponent.
Well, when we're in camp, man, we try to prepare for everything. You know, you got some guys that can only box and they can't fight in the trenches. You got others that can fight in the trenches, can't box. Some can do it left, some right. We try to prepare for everything and not just one thing in boxing. So, yes, we're going to prepare for whatever strengths the opponent has, and we're going to try to find whatever weaknesses they have to try to attack their weaknesses.
We got George in Dallas-Fort Worth that says, would you like Franchon Cruz Dizern to do a rematch with Alejandra Jimenez if she can pass a monthly drug test?
Sure. I mean, I thought it was a hell of a fight. You know, all the garbage aside, I actually thought Franchon won that fight the first time. But I think body language set it off. And but I definitely would love to revisit that fight again. But I know that she sent me a text the other day, somebody else on the radar, that they were talking about her being a fight against, mandatory fight against.
Uh-oh. So, is it Shadeja Green?
Yes, Shadeja Green.
Get
is the one.
No way. No, I don't want that fight, Coach. It's too soon. Shadeja ain't – oh, man, I don't know if Shadeja ready, man. Franchon, I was just talking about – because I seen Shadeja fight for the WBC Eliminator. I told my audience it might end up being her. I think it's too soon. Look, Franchon been on the world level. She fought Jimenez. She fought Maricela Conejo. She fought – for God's sake, she fought Clarissa her debut, man. Damn, that's not good.
And the thing is, it's crazy because I spoke to Shadeja. Someone called me for some sparring for her, not knowing that I knew something about Shadeja because she was in camp with us, with Sean before. And Kenny used to work with her. And she had said then, you know, about, you know, possibly fighting Franchon or wanting to fight Franchon. And we welcome that. You know, we don't discriminate. You know, whoever it is, you know, step up, we can get it. And so I'm definitely looking forward to it, be it Shadeja, be it Jimenez, whichever one. You know, I mean, this time, you know, it's going to be a different ball game, especially if we face that young girl again.
Man, I'm nervous. That sucks, man. I love both of them. That's like, I really know Shadeja, coach. I like, right now I can't go to the gym because they're only letting the fighters there. But like, that's the gym I train out of, man. I've sparred her. I've watched her spar countless professionals, like countless. Juan Bowser, the just four on Top Rank. I mean, Dervianchenko. I mean, she's fearless. Damn, this is crazy.
Yeah. Shadeja got a good skill set. I watched her down there with Kenny. In fact, I held the mitt for her, if I'm not mistaken. And she's a good little fighter. So, you know, our thing is simple now. You know, we're not going to take nothing for granted. I think, you know, that last fight was an eye-opener. And definitely looking forward to, you know, either Shadeja or revisiting that fight that we did in Vegas the last time.
Damn. Coach, can would you be honest, even though you might fight her, do you think Shadeja doesn't let her hands go enough? I mean, that's just my observation. I've been to, you know, she's only had five fights, but I've been to at least three. And I, like I said, I watch her spar. I feel she's a phenomenal counterpuncher, but I think she ain't getting to that groove where she's letting her hands go enough for a real fight. Like, you're not going to win a fight just countering all the time. And in my opinion, I could be wrong because, you know, every judge is different.
Well, you know, of course, when you go for that title, you know, people want to, a lot of people say they want to fight for that title, and rightfully so, but they don't understand some of what you have to go through to get it. You know, everybody's not going, when you're fighting them champions, man, they're not going to lay down and just give you, the average one, just give you their title. You're going to have to go to war to get it. So if it's Shadeja, I just hope she's prepared for war, because that's what it's going to be.
Damn. So, like I said, I'm in the gym with Shadeja, man. Like, who have you let Franchon spar with? Because all women say they spar with men, but what man has she been in there with?
Man, Franchon been in there with everybody. Franchon been in there with Anthony Peterson. She's been in there with Lamont Peterson. She's been in there with so many different pros. It's unreal. And don't flinch when she get in there. So she is really used to it.
Wow, wow, wow. Mario, pick up that next one. I'm actually texting Shadeja. She's in the gym. I'm trying to schedule her now. We at Bros.
No problem. Bros, yeah. What's a good schedule for someone training themselves? I know it's not ideal, but for people who have no resources, like a real boxing gym, but still want to get into it, running, miles/sprints, how many a days, bag work, rounds, jump, rounds, rest days, any advice would be appreciated. Big fan, by the way, Headbangers.
Thank you. It's like this. It's real simple. You have to know yourself because, you know, some people can push a little further, a little harder than others. So, you know, first thing I would do is, especially if you're just getting into this thing, go get a physical, get checked. You know what I mean? And after you get a physical and get checked, you know, kind of share with the doctor what you want to do. Because especially now in the dead of summer, and if you're doing something outside, you know, you don't want to go out there and have a heart attack or heat stroke or something like that there. I would actually limit it to maybe, especially if you're just starting out, 30 to maybe 40 minutes every other day. Start out that way. Make sure you stay hydrated. You know, make sure you eat something before you train, a little something. It could be a granola bar, banana, you know, fruit or something like that there, even a protein shake. And after you do that, and it's funny because years ago when I was on the U.S. team, and we used to go to all these nutritional meetings. One of the best recovery drinks was chocolate milk, believe it or not.
Wow.
And that window you have after you worked out, like 30, I want to say 30, anywhere from 30 to 50 minutes, somewhere in there, your body is kind of starving for the things that it lost during your workout, your salts, your potassium, your electrolytes, the whole nine. And so it wants it back bad. And so during that time, after you get finished working out, you should have a little something after you get finished working out, going out the door. So I would say at least three times a week, about 30 to 40 minutes, you know, give yourself that. And then from that, you know, you turn it up as, you know, you progress as far as your workouts are concerned.
Awesome. Awesome. Perfect advice. Moving on to Scott, the Christian Fight fan. What up, Coach Hunter? Thanks for coming on the show. You always been one of my favorite coaches in the boxing game. What you did with Lamont career has been a blessing. Love the journey. Are there still talks of possibly doing a movie about you and the Peterson brothers?
There have been talks about that for years. During the story, the movie, the book, the whole nine. But since we've been still on this journey here, myself, for sure, you know, I hadn't spoke to anyone recently about it. But it's crazy because we had this conversation recently, Boogie and I, about how our journey, you know, when we looked at the movie about NWA, we have a similar story. You know, we've been through the deaths, the shooting, the fights, the coming from zero to world titles, and the deceit, everything. It's crazy. And that was just, you got, of course, you have Lamont Anthony's story, which is crazy in itself, but you have so many stories like that, you know, throughout the gym. It's unreal, man.
Yeah, no, you know, the stories together would just be phenomenal. And I remember when they had first talked about the Ward movie, and it took forever to get done. So I still have hope for this one. I really do. I still think it could get done. You know, if I hope it does.
If it ever happens, I'm telling you, it'll be almost like a bestseller because, you know, everybody can identify with, would be able to identify with the story because, of course, everybody didn't come out of the shelters. Everybody didn't come out of the federal penitentiary. We have people that came through the gym that are now successful attorneys, EMTs, firefighters, police officers. All the stories wasn't tragic. But, yes, we did have a lot of dark stories in that gym. And it's crazy when you reflect on it, you know, because it don't seem like that many years passed. But when you reflect on it, recently, say about 2 years ago, we got this phone call. One of the kids that grew up with Patrick Harris and Javonte Davis, they all sparred and fought together, traveled together, slept together the whole night. And I got a call. It was a beautiful day. And Boogie had called me and told me this young man got shot 11 times. Now, we had him since he was about eight or nine years old. He was a little teeny boy. Never knew he was going to turn out to be as good as he was. And he competed with and beat a lot of these people, and I won't call all their names out, that you see on TV now with their title. But, you know, his life got cut short a couple of years ago. He got shot 11 times. By the time he got to the hospital, he bled out. That one there hit me harder than any of them. That one was the one that really made me just want to walk out the door. And it took a brother of mine from the streets to come tell me, and he was crying also. Look, man, he said, if you leave this place, you know, it's going to kill the program, man. He said, and the kids need you. And it's crazy because once he said that, we in there, you know, and I'm teary-eyed, I'm crying, you know, because I couldn't believe this thing because I didn't see the end game no more. A kid walked in right after, almost like on cue, walked in the gym, came in there and said, excuse me, are you Barry Hunter? And I told him, yeah. He said, I would like to join up for boxing. And I said, well, how did you, you know, find anything about us? He said, I've been watching y'all for years. I know everything. And he said, I want to train here. And I kind of smiled, and I looked at my dude, and I smiled at him. I said, all right, I get it. I hear you talking. And this creator talking to me now. So that kind of, like, you know, lit the light back up, you know, for me. Other than that, man, you know, it hit me so hard, man, I was ready to walk out the door for good.
Wow, man, that is like super powerful. I mean, just talk about, you know, God in mysterious ways. Yeah, hard transition, but we'll try it. George Foster from the UK asked,
actually,
who is the most?
Before you go there, Barry, man, I was talking about your gym to the audience not too long ago and just letting them know how enormous that place is. Not only the inside, but the outside. Like, you get to do strength and conditioning. You have like a yard. Can you just let the world know how you came to run that gym? Is it funded by the city? Like, I just want them to know what it is you do on a daily basis for the youth in your community. And, man, just really how fantastic that gym is. When you compare it to a bunch of other boxing gyms, you know, I mean, you have everything in one place, from weight rooms, multiple gyms, dozens of heavy bags. Like I said, so much space outside for the guys to do, you know, track and field and strength and conditioning. I mean, it's just a true facility.
But I got to take my hat off to DC Parks and Recs for sure. And Mayor Bowser, which I'm so proud of, you know, the way she handled herself, you know, through this whole Black Lives Matter movement and the same with Donald Trump. She really, really made us proud, you know, the way she held the ground. She's been a soldier for us. It started actually some years ago with Mayor Fenty. We had in a place that wasn't built to hold maybe, and I'm not stretching when I say this, about eight, and we had like about 65 participants. So we spread it out. We were in that room. We were in the weight room. We were in the hallway, and we just took up the whole rec center. And so the mayor came through, and, you know, of course, you got that many people in one place, man. It smelled like a barn or something. So it just so happened the mayor was at an ANC meeting around the neighborhood. Somebody told him about us. He stopped through. And he looked, the smell, he looked at the people, looked at the kids. He said, man, this ain't good. He said, look, I got it. And that's what he said. And so time passed by, and I thought it was all a crock. Time passed by, went to the gym one day, and the people were in there moving out stuff. You know, y'all got to get out, you know, and they sent us to another place, which was pretty nice, too, in the Capitol Hill area. But we were gone for like 2 years. He said, we have A1 boxing program, but the facility don't match. So they gave us a ton of money and built us a brand new gym from the ground up. You know, and I don't know who knows, you know, about my amateur background. We won over 100 national titles, you know what I mean, and pushing close to like 150, you know, on up. And so with the program being as successful as it was, the mayor came through for us. Mayor Fenty started it, Mayor Great finished it, and Mayor Bowser backed it the whole time.
And how many world champions, because you spoke of nationals, how many world champions were you able to get out of that gym?
Wow. Of course, you know, you got to go back to Lamont. You go with Adrian Bronner. The first one was a lady, young lady named Lisa Foster years ago. We've been engaged, won, and worked in so many world title fights. I asked Boogie just the other day, how many rounds do you think that we've had in boxing? And I said, combine the amateurs with the pros. So I'm really lost, man. You feel me? There's been so many fighters that we've worked with that won world titles. A lot of times, Nestor, you know, a lot of people don't know it was Boogie and I in the background working with some of these guys. We never did talk about.
All right. Mm.
It was George Foster. You want me to get it?
Yeah.
Okay. George Foster from the UK asks, who is the most talented boxer you've ever come up against?
Lomachenko may be one of the most talented fighters that I would coach against. And Rigondeaux was another one. There was a kid from Cuba named Mario Kindelan. That was just a phenomenal fighter. He fought Amir Khan in the Olympics. Those may have been three that I can think of that had to be three of the most talented fighters that we ever faced.
Mm. Definitely. Wouldn't disagree with that. We got Majinbe who says, do you mandate that all your fighters run? If so, how many miles do they have to run?
Well, of course, we're not marathon runners. So, you know, I try not to train as if we were marathon runners. We may run distance maybe two or three times a week, and the rest is more wind sprints. Because it's just like boxing. Boxing is up and down, you know. First rounds, a lot of times in the fight, be real heated, and then it kind of hit that little middle space where nothing's going on, and then down the stretch, a lot of time there's a push. So we try to, everything we do as far as our workout is concerned, surround what we do in the ring.
Well said. Got info, Joe, from out in California area, L.A., says, "What's up, Barry Hunter? I'm from L.A. I met you before in Vegas. You're one of the coolest men on the planet. Much respect for all you do for the youth. Question, do you have any cool stories about Nassim Richardson, RIP, that you could share?"
That's me and I, you know, it's crazy because I was speaking to Eric the Outlaw Hunter the other day, and he was the one who actually told me Nassim was sick. And the next day, he was on his way down here to bring his son to work out from Philly. The next day, he called me and told me Nassim had passed.
Oh, man.
I do have one story. We were in Marquette, Michigan, in the J.O.'s. And I forgot who he had at that time. I want to say it was Khalid Hightower. We called him Foots. And Nassim got into it with then the referee. I think the referee disqualified the kid.
Hey, looks like we lost you there, Barry. You got to get to the service.
Finally, he calmed down. And then so we went to the store to get something to eat that was a little ways from the dorms. And when we got there, he walked past this guy, and I believe him and the guy spoke. And then he stopped and did a double take. He was like, "Is that?" And it was the same referee that had just disqualified him, right?
Mm.
And so he was eating, getting ready to make a U-turn to the guy, and I grabbed him. I said, "Let it go, bro. It's over with." And it was so funny to me because he was getting ready to speak to this man and not recognizing that this is the same dude that he just had a heated conversation with at the dorm. And his facial expression was priceless, man. I laughed my behind off, man.
Yo,
was a soldier, though. He had some fighters, man. We had to fight them guys going through, like, the regionals. So he had, you know, what was called back then Concrete Jungle, and everybody know anybody that faced them, they knew they little theme song that they had, man. So when you saw them dudes coming, you had to fight, bro.
Isn't that the name of their gym, Concrete Jungle?
Yeah.
Concrete Jungle.
Because I feel like I remember.
They have a cool logo.
Yeah, I remember going to see Cunningham.
When I say concrete, you say jungle, concrete jungle. And it struck fear in a lot of fighters, buddy, because he has fighters that can straight do it, man.
Oh, man, I hate to make this longer, but you know what? We were talking about this question or this conversation yesterday on Untitled, and you're the perfect person for this. I feel, and one of our masterminds feels like Adrian Broner's career would have been different if he never took the step aside money and let Floyd fight Maidana. I feel like he would have dug deeper because he's seen he had a lot of success. He had late success in the Maidana fight. Plus, he suffered his first knockdown. So there was some embarrassment involved there that he needed to overcome. But by having Floyd step in, give him some money, and take over the fight, the pressure went off of him and onto Floyd. And I think, you know, Broner never dug down as deep as he probably would have got to avenge that loss had it been an immediate rematch. Is that just me in my own head, or do you think that would have worked out differently if he would have took that rematch?
I think the rematch would have been great, you know, and I think he could have benefited a lot from that rematch. But I don't think that was all the end off for Adrian. Adrian was another one that, you know, we had the privilege of working with, you know, since he was a youngster. He used to live with Boogie, as a matter of fact. And we would train him here. You know, he got into a little problem down there. We would train him here, send him back to Mike. He would fight and be back here the next week, the following week. And Adrian was just a phenomenal athlete and could do it, had skills up the wazoo. But I think a lot of the shall I say, roadblocks were self-inflicted. You know what I mean? with or without Madonna. I think his personality was to do whatever he wanted to do, to be honest with you. And I think sometimes it bothered me because I, you know, Adrian didn't get a chance to become what Adrian could have became.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Hey, let me ask you real quick, because I remember Eric Hunter pretty well. How old is his son?
His son, he got a son that's about 14 years old, and I worked with him, man. You know, and he got the power like his father had. You know, Eric used to knock almost all the kids out in the JOs. I mean, put them to sleep.
Really?
Yeah, he had, for to generate that type of power on such a small frame was phenomenal. You know,
yeah.
He could punch, man, and he had skills.
No, he did.
He could fight, man. If his son hold on to what he's doing now, based on what I saw, he'll be another one.
Yeah, I still don't forgive Eric for beating Jerry Balmontes, for coming in, taking it late notice, and still winning, but it's all good now. But yeah, man, I can't wait to see his son come up. Next one coming from King Amin of Essex says, good morning, Mr. Hunter. Ever a time when you turned down an opportunity to train a top prospect simply because you didn't think he was dedicated enough?
Good question.
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and thanks for the question. There have been, and I won't call no names, there have been times that, you know, I've been asked to, you know, train certain fighters or lead a country or what have you. But, you know, I got to feel something too. You know, it's a connection. It's an energy thing. And I don't work well with those who have negative energy. You know, if you're positive, you're willing to work hard, that sort of thing, then cool. You know, I've been known to, you know, if you know, I'm not that new traditional coach that let the fighter coach the fighter. I mean, you either go and do, you know, what we ask you to do, or you get gone. It's just that simple. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Coach, I don't know. I missed that part of the Niejo interview. How easy is it to train him? I don't know. Is he a worker? Does he love to spar? Is he, you know, I don't know. Talk to us about him just a little bit because, again, I was really excited how well he looked.
Yeah, he is my type of fighter. You know, one of the ones that you have to shut down because if you leave it up to him, he won't shut down on his own. He's always one of the type of guys that, like, say if we work out, like we work out today, and we're getting ready to do it again. You know, it's hot outside. When we go back home, you know, now it's time to chill because the rest is just as important as the workout itself because that's the time that your muscles get a chance to repair themselves. You got to watch him because he'll turn around and go run another 5 miles at night or something. And so he is that type of athlete that most coaches would love to train. Hmm. You know, he's easy, he's following instructions. I can go back to that fight, and that was our first fight together. We've been working since December. That was our first fight together, and almost everything I called from that corner, he tried to do it, or he did it. So, yeah.
One fight together?
That was our first fight together.
Damn. Now that Navarrete is moving up and you guys moved up first, is he looking for that rematch? Because Navarrete is about to get a vacant title shot with Jesse Magdaleno, who's trained by Javier Caputillo.
Well, what I would like to do, I'm going to get his body mass checked and see if he's able to go to 22 and be effective at 22. Because at 22, I think, you know, that is